the drums at the end of that, and that's one of those guitar songs that just, you know, if you're interested in learning rock and roll guitar, that's a song you have to learn how to play. That's a Roy Buchanan on that one, isn't it?
Roy Buchanan and Dean Mathis.
And isn't, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Elvis's own DJ Fontana playing drums on that particular record?
DJ was playing on the La Do Da Da.
Oh, he's not on Cross Ties. Oh, okay. I thought that was him. All right, cool. Do you remember who's playing drums on that one?
Let's see. I think it was Melvin Rogers, because we did that. I'm going to have to roll my tapes back in my mind on that one.
Okay. Okay. That's cool. So, I mean, you were so lucky. I mean, you also played with Scotty Moore.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you had some of the greatest guitar players of all time pass through your door.
Last time I saw John Fogerty, mm-hmm. he was telling me, I don't ask anybody, you know, if they did this or that. But anyway, I had this young guitar player with me. I wanted him. Anyway. He asked John, he says, how did you get into Dale Hawkins? He said, I almost went insane. He said, between Susie Q and Ain't That Loving You, Baby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And he says, Susie Q, I finally got it. He says, but I was just about ready to give up when I figured out that he tuned the G to a D on the guitar. That was Scotty.
That's the secret.
Yeah, and so whenever he said after that, he said he knew he could do it. And I said, well, you did.
Absolutely.
But Scotty was only, there's several sides with Scotty and DJ that I have. I got that stuff.
How'd you meet up with those guys? Because they seemed to be kind of busy at the time working with Elvis.
And They all had a lot of respect for me.
So they contacted you? I mean, did Scotty contact you, or
I met DJ. DJ was from Shreveport.
Okay.
And
he introduced you to Scotty Moore.
Scotty. Okay. And to, you know, because to me, Scotty Moore is the mm-hmm. guitar player.
Yeah.
If you want to just put it and tell it like it is, without Scotty Moore hitting the E the way that he did on the early stuff that he did of Elvis's, it wouldn't happen.
Mm. Wow.
To me, it wouldn't happen.
The big bang of guitar players.
Yeah.
Scotty
and
Moore.
There's a couple of other guitar. Carl Adams was a guitar player that's playing on Tornado, and several of the songs on the Tornado CD. He was the first guitar player that I got after I finally got Susie Q out, and Carl Adams was a great guitar player. He had his two fingers, his first two fingers on his left hand were blown off as a child when his dad came in from hunting, and he got his fingers and couldn't get them out, and and we'll go on to it, but I want to show you how Full House came to be from a handicap. He had to turn the guitar over. And he had to learn the chords with his right hand and learn the picking with his left. So what he would do would be tape a pick on his little finger, the ring finger, and his thumb of the left hand, and he would chord with his right hand as it turned over. And he could pull the strings instead of having to push them. Okay, I mean,
it's
everybody.
Like reverse.
I've got letters from Atkins and everybody. You know, to get him up here. You know, there's several stories like that, and I don't want to take up your time with them. But like a Carl Adams, Kenny Paulson. Kenny Paulson. I hate to even mention this. Remember Tallahassee Lassie?
Sure, Freddie Boom Boom Cannon.
Yeah, see, Kenny played on all of that stuff. Kenny Paulson.
Mm-hmm.
And he played with me for about a year or so.
Kenny's doing the guitar work on Tallahassee Lassie?
Yeah, Kenny Paulson. He's passed on now.
I see. I just assumed, and I'm assuming wrong, but I just assumed that was Freddie Cannon, because he was a guitar player too.
No, no, Freddie, my, I thought he was a guitar player.
Oh.
No. Ooh, man,
them's them's fighting words, Dale.
But hey. I mean, Freddie would tell it like it is, you know. He's a pretty straight guy.
Sure. He's a friend of the show. We could give him a call.
Yeah, you got to check, too. I mean, we go back a long way. Yeah. I know the boy good.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but
Kenny Paulson.
Kenny Paulson.
Okay.
Carl Adams, Kenny Paulson. And lately, there's a slide player out of Mississippi, a white boy, played with Barrio Burnside. His name is Kenny Brown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who is a great guitar player. He's, as a matter of fact, he's playing on the Wildcat Tamer thing. When I say Kenny, you got it. Hold it.
Oh yeah.
And I hollered it out, so, and I left that in there on purpose because it was a one-take thing. It wouldn't...
Oh, that's amazing that was a one-take. Now, we're going to talk about that in a second.
Okay.
But let's go back to your R&B influences because you did a lot of R&B covers throughout your career. And Number 9 Train, of course, was done by Tar Heel Slim, but you did a fantastic version of that song. So where were you hearing his version on the radio and you decided to cut your own? Or
I don't know. I really don't. I mean, all that I can remember was hearing. I didn't even know where I cut it. You know, the one that Billy put out. All I know is that on the acetate, it was on the acetate.
Mm-hmm.
I had a star, and then had blank good song. And man, I stuck that thing on there. I said, man, I am so glad Leonard Jeff didn't hear this sucker.
All right, let's hear it now.
Okay.
All right, here's Number 9 Train. My guest, the Rock and Roll Tornado himself, Dale Hawkins.
All right.
One morning, even say goodbye. When I hear that lonesome whistle, tears fall from my eyes. Creeping, my baby, true little baby, she my baby. My babe,
Dale Hawkins. Now, you said you had a story about My Babe.
Oh, yeah.
How you got the feeling of that song.
Okay, Roy and I were going into Chicago trying to get a backside for a house, car, and a wedding ring. And usually we could come up with something, you know, original. It was ours and everything. So finally, after a couple, 3 hours, I told him, I said, man, let's just sing some gospel music. How about that? Get away from it. And we went on, and a lady that, to me, was the greatest, one of the greatest artists, or whatever, however you want to say it, was Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
Oh, yeah.
And she had a song called This Train Is Bound for Glory, This Train. Now listen to what the song is. My baby don't stand no cheating, my baby. Okay? So we started out, we were singing Sister Rosetta Tharpe's, and Walter had cut this. Willie Dixon wrote it, wrote the word. And Walter cut it. This we took and put My Babe's, the feel, more of the feel that Sister Rosetta Tharpe had on This Train, which she wrote.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, this her version was "This Train Is Bound for Glory." This train. Mm-hmm. And, all right, and then but it, whenever we started doing it, I mean, we just it just fell right in. I mean, it was maybe a 3-take set. You know, that was all it was. It all took to get it, and
it's
it
just
was
got so much energy.
Yeah, it does, and you can hear some good playing going on back in there. If you listen, you hear Willie on bass. I see Lafayette Lee.
Playing piano?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh wow, he played with Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Okay.
Yeah, and
you recorded with the Moon Glows too, didn't you?
Yeah, they did some stuff.
Now,
yeah.
See, good night,
good
sweetheart.
Good night, sweetheart. Yeah.
Okay, now here's the thing. I got to be honest with you. I couldn't find a copy of that song.
Okay.
Because I wanted to play, I wanted to talk to you about the Moon Glows, and I wanted to play that record, but I couldn't find it.
Well, I see. There were several songs. Earl King song.
Lonely Nights.
Lonely Nights.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Harvey on the intro there of it. And
Harvey's on the intro of Lonely Nights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to pull that up because we got to play that record. I do have Lonely Nights. We got to play that.
Okay.
No, go ahead. Keep going.
Anyway, that's the Moon Glows. There were several songs. I mean, they at one time were trying to take me into another vein, and that's when the Payola stars stuff started. So that's another story.
Well, now we talk about Payola, and it's certainly a black mark on rock and roll to a certain degree, mm-hmm. And some DJs and stuff. But what people need to understand is that that's the way a small label had to do business back in the day. Because they couldn't compete with the major labels if they didn't do it. And it wasn't illegal.
Nope.
What was illegal about it is when DJs didn't declare it on their taxes as a form of income.
That's right.
And that's what Alan Freed got busted for,
for
not declaring
right.
it. Did you know Alan Freed, by the
way? Oh, yeah. I did several of Alan's shows.
Well, we need to talk about that.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, on the inside cover there, on the cover, if you got the Norton CD, mm-hmm. it's got a picture of the last show that he did. This is Bobby Darin, Fats Domino, the last one. Anyway, yeah, I did his TV shows too.
The last, when you say the last show, you talk about the last Alan Freed rock and roll show?
Yeah.
Was that out in Los Angeles?
No, I mean,
in New York, the last one in New York. The last one in New York, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, so you're talking about Payola. So there were certain, at first, I mean, they didn't need to do any Payola for Susie Q, right?
No, they didn't need to. There's a funny thing. I'd like to tell you, if we got time.
Sure.
About how what we had to go through.
Yeah, tell me how it worked.
All right. The major labels, MGM, etc., Decca, Control. They wouldn't control. They had all the markets covered, and it was hard to get any rhythm and blues, anything, because they were considered too risque, et cetera, and then you couldn't get the record, the local stations hardly to play a good Moon Glows or Flamingo, or some of the early stuff, they didn't do it until you had 5 50,000-watt stations, man. You had WLS. You had WNOE, you had KWKH, you had KARK, and then you had the Gene Nobles, all the guys in Nashville.
WLAC.
Right, WLAC. And those stations would beam out at 10 at night all over, where, because they were non-directional.
They were clear channel stations.
Clear channels.
Right.
And some of them kept everybody be up under the cover listening to Rizzo Chris on his ass show with Gene Nobles. And they playing some good stuff, like some good Chuck Berry or whatever. But that, the form of payola that we were looking at, is sometimes the record label, and not anybody knowing anything about it, because we didn't, all we wanted to do was to play music, that was it. Anyway, they would give away parts of our songs, to other disc jockeys as a form of payola.
You mean songwriting credit?
Right, songwriter's credit, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they'd make, the more they pushed the record, the more records that sold, the more it got airplay, the more money they made as DJs.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
From
that
publishing.
Was one way. Second way was that it would overship the distributor. In other words, if a disc jockey was a hot jockey in a market, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you've been in the business, man. I don't know how long, but I could say quite a while. You know all the back roads in this thing. It would be to ship in 400 or 500 stock copies to be sold, and the money to go to the jockey that was the hottest in that market.
Okay.
Right?
You push it, you get the profit.
That's right.
Right.
But the time of my life, man, was going on a promotional trip with Leonard. We left Chicago.
Oh, you were now those are famous. Those trips with Leonard are famous.
Listen, let me tell you what. We went down to this old shoe store. Dig this now.
Yep.
And he bought, I guess, as many as we could get in the trunk of that old Cadillac, along with the records. He bought these old phony lizard skin shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we take off out of Chicago. First town you come to, you know they're going to have an OK radio station, K-A-O-K, uh-huh. some kind of an OK or a rhythm and blues station there. So we'd go up, and Leonard would be talking to the guy and get him to play the record, and he said, look at his feet. What size shoes you wear? And the guy said him, he said, Dale, go out and see if you can't find a pair of those 9.5, those lizard skin shoes for me. I would. Let me tell you what. We got more airplay, man, than you ever heard of.
Just for the shoes?
Okay. All the way down. From Chicago to New Orleans, okay?
Yeah.
And then there was one guy that didn't go on the record playing, didn't play the record. He gave his shoes to. We was too far out of town to go back. I sure was glad. But Leonard had punched the buttons on that radio so hard, he broke one of the dang buttons off.
Leonard would sit around and make sure that the jockey was playing the record. That's a story I've heard. Is that
I'm talking about, that's all good and well, but what do you do whenever the jockey is there and you gone?
Yeah. If you take off for the next town and you think that the guy, the jockey in the town that you just left is going to play your record, you don't even know if he plays or not because you're out of there.
That's right.
And he'd stick around. Another great thing about Leonard is that he would he wrote payola down in his book. I mean, there's records, the chess. You go through the chess records, the books, and he wrote down when he had to pay for prostitutes for disc jockeys and stuff.
Oh yeah,
he wrote all that because it was a business expense, and he got tax deductions for it.
Oh, take this. He would have Cooperstein. He would have somebody from the office, 3 or 4 days after we had gone through the towns wherever we stopped, to call the jock up. How the shoes feeling, man? You know, I mean, if that don't fit you, we'll get you another pair in there. You know, it is just. You can look back and laugh now,
But it was serious business back then, and
yeah, it
if
was.
You didn't do it, you didn't get your record played. And certainly, we're not saying on the air right now that payola is a good thing. What we're saying is that back in the 1950s, if you were going to compete with the major labels, you had to level the playing field, and the way to level the playing field was to give a guy an envelope with some money in it, or put his name on a record so he can get some of the publishing
BMI, right.
And the ASCAP and all that sort of stuff. That's how you had to do it, and you know, they do it now. I mean, I'll say this right now. Payola still exists. It's alive
sure
and
does.
Well. It's just they don't do it. They don't pay off DJs anymore. Now they pay off complete radio companies. They pay off the whole company and to get a record played now. So it's a whole different ballgame, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about you. Dale Hawkins.
All right, man.
All right, now listen. Let's go back in time a little bit here. A few minutes ago, we talked about... You said Harvey is singing the beginning of Lonely Nights.
I'm sure he has been a while since I heard it, but the moon
well,
should
it.
Be.
Let's do it, all right?
All right.
Here you are. Dale Hawkins with me on the Night Prowl Show. It's the 50s on 5.
There's been some lonely nights.